Hello, everybody. Hi. How are you doing today? I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time for It's All About Food. It is all about food. You know that, and I know that. So I'm really enjoying the day today. It's nice and fresh and cool and wet. And the seasons are really fun. I had to actually close the window because the air is too cold, and I've put some cozy socks on. This is quite a change from the summer, and it's just really nice to feel the change. And we're going to be talking in a moment with someone who might have some enlightening things to say about the change in seasons when it comes to food and plants. I'm going to bring on my guest, Steve Brill. He's been on the show, years ago. He's a naturalist author. We call him Wild Man Steve Brill, and he's been leading foraging tours in parks throughout the greater New York area since 1982 for the public, for schools, libraries, parks departments, day camps, scouting groups, teaching farms, museums, environmental organizations, and more. And we're going to hear a whole lot more in a moment. Steve, are you with us?
Yes, and my daughter and partner Violet is here too.
Fantastic. Hi, Violet. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Good. Now, I understand that Violet is a 13-year-old naturalist, a self-taught expert on birds, and she's been co-leading half of your public tours and many private tours with schools, scouts, doctors, museums, day camps, teaching farms, birthday parties, herbalists, artists, since she's been 9 years old. Fantastic. Okay, so we're going to be talking about edible medicinal wild plants and mushrooms plus hands-on environmental education for kids today, right?
Definitely.
Excellent. Okay. Now, I'm hearing a little bit of moving around, so if you can stay still and talk, we won't have some of that clunky background noise. Got it?
Yeah, well, that noise isn't coming from us.
Oh, is it coming from me? Maybe it's coming from cyberspace.
If you hear it right now, I mean, we're just sitting still right now.
So. Good.
No, I hear something in the background.
Yeah, I hear like a sound, like a whispering sound.
What bird species would that be?
What
bird makes that sound?
Anyway, so how are you guys doing today? You're good?
Yeah, we're great.
It's not the best day for foraging in New York. It's kind of wet and rainy.
Yeah, we're happy to be here. We're so excited. We didn't even stop for a big bunch of ringless honey mushrooms that Violet spotted from the car. Not the first time.
Yeah, we were driving down the road to get here, and I just saw them.
Wow, what do they look like?
They're brown. They grow in clusters near the bases of trees. They are deadly if you're a tree. They'll parasitize you, and then they'll grow through your roots to the next tree and kill that too. They're like a mass murderer for trees. Very dangerous. For people, they are normally considered just good. Edible mushrooms have three classifications, choice, good, and edible. And these are only good, but I recently discovered that if you roast them with a puree of white miso, olive oil, pine nuts, and spices, garlic, rosemary, sage, thyme, a little bit of hot sauce, until they start to brown in the oven, they are really, really good.
Really, really good. Not just edible, but really, really good.
Yeah, they become choice. There are things you can do with mushrooms that are considered mediocre that become great when you cook them the right way. And best known example of this is that mushrooms that are bad sauteed, French method, are actually excellent in soups, which is how some of these mushrooms are cooked in Chinese and Japanese or Korean cuisine. They know that these are not ones that you saute or stir fry. And the ratings in Western mushroom books are therefore just wrong.
Well, my understanding is from a medicinal point of view, it really helps to boil the mushrooms for a really long time.
It depends on how you want to use them.
Yeah, yeah, and it also depends on the species of mushrooms. I mean, boiling mushrooms, I mean, sometimes it won't give it any much flavor or the good texture that it has.
Yeah, often the medicinal substances are water-soluble. With plants, it depends on the plants. Some plants, the medicinal principles are alcohol soluble, and then you make a tincture, you soak them in alcohol, and then remove the plant and pour a tablespoon of the alcohol into a cup of water just off the boil, leave that uncovered for 20 minutes so the alcohol evaporates, and then the tea is ready to go.
Now that's really interesting, because I remember looking to see how to do a tincture to draw out the alcohol soluble components of mushrooms rather than the water soluble parts, and I never saw anything that sounded that simple.
It depends. Like sassafras, you boil, and common evening primrose flowers, you tincture.
Okay, but I never heard anything so simple as just adding a little bit of alcohol and letting it evaporate off, and then you get.
You tincture it first, and then put the tincture into the water, into the hot water, to boil off the alcohol.
Okay, very good. So let's delve some more into medicinal wild plants. What have you got for us? How can you help us?
Okay, you eat a lot of plants once you've identified them, and the nutrient contents are really high. They taste great. And
yeah, there's just so many ways that they benefit. I mean, just from the taste and from, like, the fun of collecting them and cooking them.
Give me some examples.
Okay, we have purslane in the refrigerator. That is an extremely good source of iron and vitamin A. Probably, I'm a vegan, probably the best vegan source of omega-3 fatty acids, which prevents heart disease.
Wow.
And I'm thinking of making a soup. With that, some quinoa and rockweed, which is a seaweed we have in the refrigerator.
Can we talk a little bit more about that? I have a question about purslane, because when I used to get it in my community support agriculture box, I didn't care for it very much. It had a funny texture, kind of slimy. So is it better when you cook it in a soup?
Well, it depends. If you're the type of person who hates okra, you may not like purslane. Don't like it, it's called slimy. If you like it, it's called mucilaginous. So you have something that's thickened, like something thickened with sassafras leaves, say a gumbo. And I love the stuff.
And, okay. Is there another word other than mucilaginous? That doesn't sound too good either.
Those are the two... Those are the two words that are generally used.
Okay. Very good. So I'll try it again sometime because it's so good for you.
Yeah, and I love it. I've made dozens of recipes with it.
Yeah, you take advantage of the texture for a plant or for a mushroom. You take advantage of how to use it. Like there's this plant called burdock, and it has a very usable root. The root is very tough, so we took advantage of the toughness of the root, and we made a jerky with it out of burdock.
Oh, that's cool. I've heard that that's really good for you. Burdock jerky. Woo!
Yeah. We marinate it, and then we bake it, and it turns out really well. It's like the texture of jerky and with, like, the same herbs and spices, but it's burdock.
Yeah, and it is, I do have to admit, it is a political plant, so you have to know that. And it has a really, really deep root. It's hard to dig up, and what you want to do is go with a shovel, hold the shovel, go after it's rain when the ground is soft, hold the shovel really tight in two hands, an inch from the root, and then stomp as hard as you can on the shovel, yelling, "Donald Trump! Donald Trump!" And the burdock comes right up. That's the environmentalist method of digging up burdock.
Okay, I didn't inform you beforehand, but I don't like hearing that person's name on this program. But that's okay. In certain instances. all right. So burdock is good. Now, we don't know what some of these things are because this is an audio show and some people may not be familiar with them. Now, I know that you give tours in the New York metro area. The first question I have for you, is it legal yet to forage in our city parks?
Well, technically, it is legal. There's a park regulation that says thou shalt not remove any vegetation from the park, which includes kindergarten kids removing autumn leaves from the park. But that's a regulation. It's not a law. A law is something that a legislature passes. So technically, it's not illegal. It is against park regulations. So back at 4 p.m. on March 29th, 1986, I was leading a foraging tour in Central Park, and it turned out there were undercover agents on the tour, a man and a woman. They said they were married. They never held hands or kissed. I figured they'd been married a long time. They paid me with marked bills. They had surveillance cameras and walkie-talkies. Every time I held up a specimen, the man would take a picture, only I was the specimen. At the end of the tour, I ate one leaf of a dandelion. The male ranger ducked behind a tree, took out his walkie-talkie. All right, there he is on 86th Street. Go get him. Every park ranger in Central Park popped out from behind the bushes. They surrounded me in case I was going to climb up a tree. They put me in handcuffs lest I bop them on the head with a dandelion. They searched me. I don't know if looking for weeds or weed. And then they hauled me off to the police station in handcuffs. They took fingerprints. They took mugshots. They searched my backpack. Fortunately, I'd eaten all the evidence. And then they a desk appearance ticket that said I had to go to court and could face up to a year in jail if convicted. The charge was criminal mischief for removing vegetation from the park. This was before the internet, so after 3 hours in jail, they let me go with a desk appearance summons, and I went and called every TV station, newspaper, radio station, wire service, and the phone book. Next day, on the way to the newsstand, five cops came after me. "What do you want?" I said. "I haven't eaten a single dandelion. I haven't even had breakfast yet." One of the cops says, "We don't care. We want your autograph." I was on front pages of newspapers around the country, 5 minutes on CBS Evening News with Dan Rather, Channel 2 and Channel 4 News waiting behind them online. I got on everything from Letterman to MTV. The BBC covered it in London.
The coal miners' strike is in its fifth week, and in New York City, they arrested the ranger man of Central Park for eating a dandelion.
When they took me to court, I served Wild Man's five-borough salad on the steps of the Manhattan Criminal Courthouse to reporters and passersby. I love cooking, and this recipe was great. The press ate it up. I got on all the TV stations and newspapers a second time. TV shows, I couldn't walk down the street without people stopping to shake my hands, and the PR forced the Parks Department to turn over a new leaf. They negotiated with me, dropped the charges, and hired me to lead the same foraging tours I was leading when I was arrested. And when the Parks Commissioner and I shook hands, we got on all the media a third time. I worked for the Parks Department from 86 to 90, left when a new administration came in, basically reneged on the agreement with the old one. 10 years later, previous commissioner Benepi told me the real reason they had arrested me is because the parks officials were terrified of frivolous lawsuits. In their imagination, someone would pretend to have been poison foraging, sue the city, and say that they allow foraging by pointing to me. So when they arrest you for one reason and the real reason is something totally different, it's a case of official wrongdoing called false arrest, and I wish they'd do it again.
Okay, I wish they would do it again, too. Now, Steve, that was 35 years ago when you first started. And has anything changed in the parks that you've been foraging in? Are there still the same plants? Are there new ones? Have you lost any?
Well, all the weeds that we pick are...
All the things that we've been picking are just like we've been picking them every single time we have the tour. We've picking them in the same spots, the same amount of them. In the same spots for years.
Yeah, these are renewable resources.
They're not rare plants.
Right, they're the same.
You pick them, they grow back again. You pick them, they grow back again. You pick them again, and they'll grow in another spot.
Yeah, but there have been changes. Violet and I found wild carrots in February. We made carrot bread with it. And normally the carrots are around all winter, but they're underground. And the leaves die at the end of November and then regrow at the start of March. And we found the leaves right there in the ground so we could dig up the carrots in February. So there's two possible explanations. One is we had a really warm, wimpy winter caused by climate change, and the leaves were never obliterated like something you get in Virginia, not in the northern suburbs of New York where we live. But that would mean that global warming is true. And as everyone knows, that's a myth. So the other explanation is things came and planted the carrots to us into thinking that global warming was real.
I was going to ask you about global warming, and there it is. You've enlightened us.
Yeah, well, I'm a lifelong student of science, and if you look at the coral reefs, you look at the evidence in the snow in Antarctica, all the climate models, fossils, every single bit of evidence which is published in peer review, it's about as convincing that climate change caused by humans is real as if the Earth goes around the sun. But of course, people deny that too for a long time.
Yeah, there's a whole flat Earth movement going on. What's next?
Who knows? A lot of bad ideas are going to keep repeating.
We
need better education.
Yes. Yeah, well, Violet sounds like she's pretty smart and pretty well educated.
I learned the plants, the birds, the mushrooms.
Yeah, you have to make learning fun, and somehow.
Yeah, we do music. We do music on an instrument we call a brillophone. If you come on a tour, you'll see.
Well, if someone has a birthday, this is what we'll do. We've turned out hundreds of experts in plant identification who use nature, science, and ecology. And how many tests do we have to give people to
come?
Oh, no tests. Yeah. You know, they're actually not necessary.
Yeah, we do music on the tour. We also do we have dope, and yeah, his app Wild Edibles Forage. We have art. He has art that he made of the plant and pictures of the plant in different stages. We show that on the tours. We do games, stories about the plant.
And you give out prizes?
Yeah, we give out prizes. We give out samples of our recipes that we make, like the burdock jerky.
Yeah, you don't need the standard educational system for learning. And again, Violet learned all the birds on her zero. Zero tests. She goes on tours with adult birders who've been studying birds for decades, And wow. She knows as much as any of these grown-ups. And that's been going on for over a year.
It's the third year.
Your third year of birding.
Yeah.
And she has a bird, too.
I have a parakeet, and his name's Wisteria. And when we leave, he'll say, love you, bye to us. He's really smart.
Yeah, he sees her sneakers and her backpack. He knows what to say.
Yeah, and he's named it Wisteria. He's named after an edible flower.
That's lovely. Violet, are there any vegetables that you don't like?
That I don't like.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Maybe, vegetables I don't like. I mean, there are some plants that I don't really like, that I don't like to eat.
I can't think of any.
Yeah, I can't really think of any, but, in terms of just anything, any vegetables I don't like, I'm sure there's something, in, a different cuisine.
You don't like celery.
I don't like celery.
Yeah. Oh.
I don't like celery. I mean, I like it sometimes, but I don't like it if someone chops up celery and puts it in the soup or something. I don't like that.
That's interesting. Okay. Well,
these plants are very, very flavorful.
There's a plant called wood sorrel and tastes like lemonade. It looks like clovers, except clover has oval-shaped leaves and the wood sorrel has heart-shaped leaves.
What is it called?
Wood sorrel.
Sorrel,
it means sour in French, and it tastes sour like lemonade.
As Violet said, people confuse it with clover. They both have three leaves, and the way I keep it straight is the wood sorrel has heart-shaped leaves, so it reminds me of Violet. The clover has oval leaves, no hearts, so it reminds me of my ex-girlfriend who ran off with another guy on Valentine's Day 22 years ago who also has no heart. Don't laugh. It's only been 22 years.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I know. Okay, so if we go into a park and we forage, even though it's not really okay because of the regulations, are there anything else, any other things we need to look out for? Clearly, we need to know what we're picking, but are there any parks that use herbicides and pesticides, other things that might get on some of these wild plants?
Well, you don't want to pick things in gardens where there's spraying. And if you see some of the leaves damaged by insects and you see bees flying around, then you know there aren't any pesticides applied.
But normally you do want to pick away from the traffic, especially with root vegetables. There's this plant called field garlic. It looks like, and it kind of tastes like a chives. But you use the bulb of it also, as well as the leaf. It's like grass, except grass has flat leaves, and field garlic has round-shaped leaves.
And the field garlic smells like onions and garlic. The grass, for some reason, smells just like grass.
And that's a funny thing.
That will pick up lead from car exhaust from when they used to be lead in the gasoline. So that one especially you pick far from the road. That was a difficult one for me to learn. I had no one to teach me. So when I started, I had a field guide that showed the field garlic, but I went out dozens of times and just never saw it. I'm into exercise. And I just did a mile in the pool today. I did a mile in the pool back 36 years ago. I finished swimming, and it was this guy by the name of Chuck holding on to the side of the pool. And I spoke to him every once in a while. And I said, Steve, how are you doing? I said, fine. Chuck, I'm into cooking. I'm trying to learn edible plants now. And Chuck says, Steve, I know one. It's called field garlic. Field garlic, Chuck, where is it? You have to let me know. I almost drowned the guy. he finally admitted that it grew near a ball field in Alley Pond Park in Queens by the backstop that I just showed Violet 2 weeks ago. She's heard this story all her life, but we actually went there for the first time. And next day was my bicycle exercise day. So I bicycled out there, and there was the field garlic right where Chuck had said. I smelled it, definitely something in the onion and garlic family. Picked a lot of it, started bicycling home, and then I started seeing it in other spots of the park. I saw it.
Once you know these plants, once you recognize them one time, you can recognize them every single time. Once you go on our tours, you'll keep recognizing the things, like in your yard, and you walk down the street, you will recognize them.
Yeah, and when I got home, there it was growing right in front of the service entrance to my apartment building. I enter with a bike. I've been confusing it with grass. But as Violet said, grass has flat leaves. Field garlic has round cylindrical leaves. And there's a lot of very obvious things you're going to learn when you're a beginner. One thing is smell everything. But another danger is poison ivy. So that one you have to learn what it looks like in all its stages. So we show people all the stages that are in front of us. And again, I have my app, and we look at pictures of different times of the year and different parts of the plant. Do you want to talk about poison ivy?
Yeah, so poison ivy, it has three leaves. The middle leaf has a stem, and if you touch it, you'll get a rash. It has lots of different stages. It's a woody plant, so it can grow as a vine, up a tree, on the ground, just like a shrub on the ground. And in the winter, it's a shrub. It's a great stick coming out of the ground with a little bud. And if you touch poison ivy, you can get a rash. Not everyone gets it. And if you do get the poison ivy, it'll stay there for about a week, and it's a very annoying plant. But the two good qualities is that one, it's easy to find everywhere. It can grow in wet areas, dry areas. And the second great quality about poison ivy is that it's reliable. You can count on it. Sometimes you have a friend, and they say that they'll do something for you, but then they just don't do it. They're not a very reliable friend that you can count on. But with poison ivy, you can always count on the poison ivy to give you a rash at any time of year, at any stage, no matter what. That poison ivy will be there for you.
And then, as Violet said, not everyone is sensitive to it. There was an old German lady by the name of Louisa who came on one of my tours and started pumping my hand.
Oh, my name is Louisa. So happy to meet you. I saw you on the TV. I heard about you in the newspaper. I'm going to know all the plants. You show me all the plants? Yeah.
So I say we're going to start the tour. I say we're going to look at poison ivy. And Louisa enthusiastically grabs it in her hand, shaking it around.
Yeah, Mr. Ruiz, is this step plant?
Louisa, don't touch it.
No, I touch it all my life.
Please, sit down.
Nothing happened to me. I touch it all my life.
A week later, Louisa comes on another tour. Both her arms are covered with bandages. Louisa, what happened to you?
Yeah, Mr. Bill, you look right. I shouldn't have touched your poison ivy. I don't do that no more.
It took her 60 years to become sensitive to it.
And,
worst thing to do with poison ivy is burn it. And if you burn it and breathe in the smoke,
yeah, there's only one person who wouldn't be harmed. Very famous person, lives in my region in Westchester, and his wife is even more famous than he is. They live in Chappaqua, so that is Bill Clinton, and he doesn't inhale.
Oh, but bump. You guys are a riot. I was going to say you should be stand-up comedians, but I guess you are. You stand up in the park and do your thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have a lot of fun on the tours. And people who want to find out about us, it's Wildman Steve Brill, BRILL.com. The app is Wild Edible Storage. I have five books, all with different emphasis. Cookbook, Foraging with Kids, Early Spring Shoots and Greens, Wild Vegan Cookbook, whole bunch of different books with more on the way. And Violet's going to do this when she grows up, maybe a deeper to get a more mythology.
Wow. I have one question. Are you familiar with the art project Swale?
Yes, I may wind up working with them. I've been in touch with them. We're looking for a date. That'll be a lot of fun. I can't wait to do that. Violet doesn't know about Swale. It's a barge that's in the Hudson River that has edible wild plants in it.
I've heard of that.
Oh, you have heard of it?
Yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, the website is swaleny.org, and my understanding is because foraging isn't really encouraged in the parks, this artist created an edible forest or an edible garden on a barge, which isn't on land, so the regulations don't necessarily apply, and children and adults can learn all about all these plants, and it's a fun thing to do. Right now, it's in the Bronx.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think sometime in mid-September, they're coming to Manhattan, and I'm going to probably do a tour with them in the morning and on a day when I have Central Park scheduled and do Central Park in the late afternoon. Again, people can come on my tours. No one has come after me in, 31 years. And again, the main concern, as related to me by Commissioner Benepe, is that they have their legal butts covered by saying that they don't allow foraging, so they're not afraid they're going to get sued.
I get it. It's all about lawsuits and liability.
Correct.
Especially when it comes to food. Well, Wildman Steve Brill and Violet Brill, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to join me on It's All About Food. It's really been a lot of fun.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been really fun.
Okay, last thing we have to say
is...
are great. I wish I knew you were going to do that. I would have harmonized with you. Thanks again for joining me.
Okay,
be well.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Are we up there?
Yeah, not yet, but you'll be off now. That was Steve Brill and Violet Brill. And check them out at wildmansteve.com. Let's take a little break. And when we come back, I'm going to be talking with Celine Ekeller, the Karma Baker. We'll be right back. Everybody, I'm Karen Hartglass, and welcome to the second part of It's All About Food. Thanks for being with me today. I want to bring on my second guest for the day, Celine Ekeller. She is the Karma Baker. You know, before I continue with this, I just have to take a moment. You're hearing my New York accent come out. No matter how much I try, it's karma. It's not karma. Anyway, Celine Ekeller is the Karma Baker, a mother, artist, and foodie with a daily meditation practice. Celine has refined a new style of baking. She is transforming organic, plant-based, and gluten-free ingredients into extraordinary baked goods for everyone while she's immersed in serving up desserts such as Karma cakes, brownies, Karma sandwich, cookies, cake pops, layer cakes, donuts, pies, tarts, cheesecake, muffins, rolls, baguettes, and bread loaves. It is her custom-made organic gluten-free baking flour mix that puts the magic in all of it. A proprietary blend of vegan flour, Celine was in need of a gluten-free flour that was bean-free. After years of trial and error, she magically perfected a recipe which was not only bean and nut-free, but also enhanced her overall vegan baking. We're going to hear a lot more from Celine. Welcome to It's All About Food.
Hi, thank you so much.
Karma.
Right?
Karma. Oh my goodness, I can't believe I fell into that trap. Hi.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today.
You're welcome. So I want to tell you, synchronicity, serendipity. It was my mom's 84th birthday this weekend, and the whole family got together out on Long Island, which I learned how to say when I lived in Pennsylvania, Long Island, Long Island. Anyway, my niece has celiac disease, and she was diagnosed 8 years ago when she was four. And I jumped in and started learning all about gluten-free baking back then. And so I was looking for a vanilla cake recipe. I wanted to make my mom a raspberry vanilla cake. I'm vegan. There's a bunch of vegans in the family. So it gets challenging to meet everyone's needs. So I found your vanilla cake recipe online.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I have to admit, I didn't use your baking mix because I didn't have time to order it. And I ended up using Bob's one-to-one flour mix. It came out great. And it's a great recipe.
Thank you.
It was just a fantastic hit. And I used Jus Dever's Swiss buttercream recipe from her Aquafaba cookbook.
Oh, nice.
The combination was just fantastic.
I bet. That sounds great. Yeah.
Yes.
Nice,
so
light,
thank you
fluffy.
For that.
You're very welcome. That's wonderful. I'm glad you found it.
Yeah.
That means Google's working.
Google is working. But it was just funny because I really wasn't that familiar with you before. And then knowing that I was going to talk to you, pop, there it was.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Deepak Chopra has a book right now that just came out, which is kind of a reprise of an older book he did, but it's called Synchro Destiny. And I'm reading it right now. And it's very much about the small coincidences in life and that once you start to notice them and accept them in, you actually will start to see them happening everywhere and they will guide you towards your like larger purpose and, you know, a fuller life. So,
okay. So
you're totally on it.
No, but we're going to focus on you in a minute, but I have to tell you that I know that Synchro Destiny video program because some of the other things I do in my life is I vet programs for people to see if they want to promote them, and
oh,
I
cool.
got access to Deepak's Synchro Destiny program, and I got to watch all of it. It's fascinating, and so it's funny that you bring it up because... I really enjoyed it. And this whole coincidence thing is, if you're paying attention, is amazing.
Right, right.
Because there are no coincidences.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. It's there are no coincidences. And in fact, it really is just the universe sort of tapping you on the shoulder saying, oh, look, see, you're doing it right. Oh, look, everything's aligned, you know? So
yes.
I love that. I really love it. I'm jealous you got to see the whole video program. I'm curious about it.
Yeah, it's good. Especially to hear him in his calm, metered tone present
right?
the ideas and the stories. Yeah.
Yeah. Now he is like gravitating towards guru-ness all the time. Oh, I just love him. I love listening to him. He's meditative and just wonderful.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, tell me briefly your story. How did you get into vegan and gluten-free baking?
Well, for me, it all started with allergies. And I know that that's a lot of stories for many people because we have so many customers that are limited due to allergies and stuff. But for me, we had moved in 2003 next door to a family, and their daughter was anaphylactically allergic to like 20 foods, you know, and the wheat, the dairy, the eggs, you know, soy and nuts, like the common ones, you know, but then also like certain fruits and certain vegetables and oils, you know, just so many things. And so she was on such a limited diet and so fearful with food. And I live next door and I was stay-at-home mom just baking away all the time because heck, it's fun. I don't know. I just had a you know, wild hair to always be baking. Mm-hmm. And so I would bring stuff out, you know, to the neighbor's house at play dates or, you know, they'd come over. And it just broke my heart that she was so, so left out. And, you know, left out is like one bad thing. But then the other side of it is, you know, the options that she had were disgusting, you know, and nobody else wanted to eat it. And she was barely even excited about having it. So I couldn't really handle it. I thought, oh, I got to just make something for her that, you know, is good enough that my kids would eat it too. And I could bring it over and we would all do it, you know. And so that's when I kind of got started. I looked at what she could eat and figured out a brownie recipe from there. And my kids liked the brownie and she liked the brownie. And it was kind of like an open door, like, hey, that's kind of cool what I just did there. And then about a few years later, I was talking to her mom, who was like an allergy expert because she, you know, had been so on top of Sophia's allergies. And I told her I had this runny nose that just would never go away. You know, anytime I tried to take away a food or every time I ate anything, didn't matter what it was, my nose would run. And she said, it's definitely a food allergy. You should have a blood test done. So I did. And when I got the test back, it also said I had dairy, eggs, wheat, gluten, beans, and weird things like bananas and pineapples and garlic as well, which I've later found are kind of related. And, you know, I really love chocolate chip cookies. And I thought, well, now I better really pick up my game because I want to eat a cookie that's like awesome. You know, there's no point in eating dessert that's not good, you know? So, or is like, oh yeah, it's kind of like a cookie. Oh, it's kind of, it's sweet. It's chewy. You know, for me, it's like got to be satisfying and indulgent and great, you know? So that's where the opening up the books and learning about, you know, well, what is vegan gluten-free baking, which didn't really exist then. There was some vegan and there was gluten-free, but it didn't really collide very much. And it all came down to the flour for me. I couldn't even use, you know, Bob's Red Mill All-Purpose was the big one then.
Right.
And it's got beans, it's got garbanzo bean flour and fava bean in it. And I couldn't use it. So I started like dissecting what it was made of, you know, and then came up with my own version and realized that when I used it in any kind of basic recipe, just your old, you know, Ina Garten's great recipe, I could not need eggs as much as I did. You know, I didn't need the binding agents. And it was moist and it was tender and it had a really nice crumb. And so I knew I was kind of onto something when I started the flour blend. But then, yeah, I got so good at this whole vegan gluten-free that my friends, and especially, you know, Sophia's mother was like, you know, nobody has this. You have to get out there with it. You have to start a bakery. And so I did. Crazily enough. And then my vegan trip just started after that, you know, it very easily turned into a lifestyle. So.
Well, what I think for me, what's important about gluten-free vegan baking is number one, I'm a vegan. I've been vegan for almost 30 years. And
great.
And my primary reason is I don't believe in killing living species, right, non-human animals. And so I want to help people do that. And I'm also passionate about healthy food, whatever. But I want people to know that they can have their cake and eat it too. They can have all the treats and there's no deprivation. So if you want to go vegan and you happen to be gluten-free, a lot of people feel like, oh, I still have to eat eggs and dairy because I'm not going to be able to have these things and have it vegan. And that's just not true.
Right, right. That's exactly our take on things is, you know, we pride ourselves in creating the old-fashioned desserts, the just as creamy, just as delicious. It looks just as good as the real thing. And you aren't missing anything when you eat it. And in the hopes that when someone eats that, they go, wait a minute, this doesn't have butter and eggs? Like, then maybe I don't need it every time I bake. You know, maybe I don't need it in my life as much as I think I do. You know, that's our ultimate goal. And we see it happen all the time. People come in and they're like, I've just decided to try being vegan. You know, what do you guys have? And we'll say, everything in the case, everything in the whole place, you know, take your pick. And they're like, wow, you know, and then they do, they eat it with a mindset of like, it can't be that good, but then they try it and they're kind of moved to a different kind of thinking. And if we just do that, you know, one person, you know, that's what we've set out to do, you know. And of course, we've wanted to do that to a lot more than one person. But
yeah. Now, people can order online.
Yes, we have. Our website is set up so you can see what we have in the bakery.
I'm looking right now. It's crazy. Oh,
yeah, the bakery itself is amazing.
Okay, everybody right now, if you're listening, you need to go to karmabaker.com/shop, and you'll see all of these amazing, amazing desserts. Oh, my God. The karma cakes, they look like those...
the Hostess Cupcake.
What were they called?
Yeah.
Hostess Cupcake with a little white squiggle on top and the creamy white filling. Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. Recreating, you know, what you had from your childhood is what we love to do. You know, so we've got the oatmeal cookies. That's literally the recipe for the oatmeal cookies. I took the Quaker box, you know, you take the lid off and there's that recipe there. It was one of my favorites as a kid.
The Toll House cookie.
And then, yeah, well, that's the chocolate chip cookie. So the oatmeal cookie is the one inside the oat tube, you know, it's a cardboard thing. And I just replaced the eggs with this one particularly just has the egg replacer, which is just kind of a sodium bicarbonate, you know, reactive kind of egg thing. And then I put my flour in and coconut oil. And it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That fantastic.
A win. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm looking at your vegan sprinkles right now. That looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah. We have a lot of people that, like I said, they have allergies and they are sensitive to artificial colors, or they just don't, you know, they're in it for the health and they know that that stuff's not good for you. You know, artificial coloring has been banned in Europe for, you know, 10, 15 years, I think. You know, they don't allow it in their cereal or anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're on to something. They know about that stuff. So, you know, we'll use it upon request because we, you know, love to give people what they want. But we definitely, you know, in the bakery, if you come in and want sprinkles, you know, we'll always use the vegetable dyed sprinkles.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I do avoid all those food colorings because how terrible they are for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it makes sense. I mean, the plant kingdom is filled with so many beautiful colors that
That's
we
true.
Should be able to access them in a more natural way rather than those synthetic versions.
Right. It's kind of like, you know, we're creatures of, you know, visual eating. And I think we've gotten away from that colorful plate, you know, if you see some of those, like you take a rainbow of fruit and put it on a platter, like nobody can stay away from it. You know, that's what people want. We just have gotten away from realizing that food is, you know, not processed and, you know, comes from the farmer's market.
Now, what are the most popular items at the Karma Baker?
Definitely the most popular is the Karma Cake, which is the Hostess style cupcake. So it's a chocolate cupcake filled with the vanilla cream, and then it's got the chocolate glaze on top and a white swirl. And we actually are just about to come up on selling 50,000 of those.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that they're better than the original.
You are totally right.
Of course, because I know you use quality ingredients.
Yes. Yeah, they really are. They're so much better tasting. You know, we use really good quality chocolate, organic cocoa powder, you know, that's, you know, not locally sourced, what's it called? It's free trade. You know, we use really good vanilla. It's ingredients that there's no like fake chemicals in it, nothing to keep it fresh. You know, it's not meant to sit on the counter for months, you know, and yeah, people love them.
Wow. Mexican wedding cookies.
Yeah.
How do you do that? What's the secret?
So those, cause they are like a shortbread, which is basically, you know, butter with a little bit of flour, right? Those are vegan butter is our butter of choice, and it's, you know, organic palm shortening and oil. And, mm-hmm. You know, in those kinds of cookies and those kinds of things, it's really about the technique that you're doing it in. You know, you want to cut the cold butter in. You don't want to over process it. You know, you don't want to stir it up too much and, you know, barely mix it and then bake them at high heat for real quick. And you get a beautiful, soft, crumbing cookie.
And most of your ingredients are organic. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. We really do try to go organic. Usually organic, you know, is the way to vegan. So, you know, organic sugar means it's not going to have bone char. Organic palm shortening means it's not going to be hydrogenated. We just prefer organic, you know, and our customers do, and we're respectful of that. So if it's possible to get it that way, we do.
Okay. So I understand that you have this new product, the unicorn donut.
Yes.
What's special about that?
So I'd say the unicorn donut is probably our next best seller lately. That is like born out of this unicorn craze that's kind of going on right now, which I didn't realize was going on. I think I tapped into it in the collective, and so I went to bed one night, and when I woke up, I had this picture of a donut in my head with a unicorn horn and these super fun sprinkles. And I just made it. I didn't know what to do with it. I kind of put it out in the front case and I put it online. People went crazy for it. And then I realized this unicorn thing is so big right now. And I think really people love unicorns because I think we're all kind of unicorns. You know, we're all kind of, we're not the same. We're all totally unique and we're all hard to see. You know, we're all hard to find because I think we live in a world that doesn't want to see differences. It doesn't want to see the inside. You just want to see the like beautiful outside. It's all the same as the next door neighbors, you know? So I think that it really speaks to something in people that's like, this is my hidden special self, you know, and I'm going to let it out. So
the last item I want to talk about, which is making me want to lick the screen here, is the arugula.
Oh yeah, arugula is so good.
Yeah.
So we are right next door to a Shabbat center, and for a long time we have a big Jewish community around us. And a long time they'd come in and they'd say, you know, oh, are you kosher? And we were like, we're not, but we're vegan and we're gluten free, you know. And they're like, doesn't matter. So we got our kosher certification from the rabbi next door, and you know, it just really is part of that like inclusive, all are welcome. We really do like want everybody to have all of the good stuff, you know. So really,
yeah, well,
the
vegan
first thing
is,
we did
vegan is like naturally kosher, but you have to have the blessing,
right? Yes.
Yeah.
So the rabbi came over and did his deal. It was amazing.
Yes, and then you paid him.
Yes.
Yeah, it's all about that. So, I mean, well, for any certification, there's always some sort of transaction.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. And what's important for kosher, I always like to say that vegan's better than kosher. But, and I can say that because I come from a Jewish upbringing.
Yeah.
But I'm not religious today. Not wanting to mix dairy with meat, these vegan items are perfect.
Yes.
For those who are eating kosher, because they can have all of the dairy-like items when they're not supposed to be eating dairy because there's no dairy in it.
Exactly. We love that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, wow. I'm very excited to find out about you. I was very excited to use your vanilla cake recipe, and I think I will be visiting your order shipping page.
Perfect. Wonderful.
Yeah,
I hope that you do.
Yeah, I think my niece will really enjoy some of these things that you have here.
That's great. Yeah, the website also has recipes. Like you said, you found the vanilla cake on the blog. So there's recipes there that if you get the flour, you know, we've tried and tested this flour in our bakery for, you know, 4 years now. Like, we know what works and how it works. So, you know, I've spent tons of money throwing away ingredients on bad recipes. So I guarantee these recipes will work.
So, fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Celine, for joining me on It's All About Food.
Thank you so much. It was really nice talking to you.
Okay. Have a delicious week.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. That was Celine Ikeller of Karma Baker. And we have just a few minutes left, and I wanted to bring up a few things. So you may remember I spoke with Stacy Murphy last week about growing your own vegetables. And I happened to be on her list, and I found out that there is a deadline tonight to register for a program. It's this spring's Grow Your Own Vegetables, and it's at growyourownvegetables.org. And so if you're interested in that, the registration closes tonight. I think we all like to know more about growing our own vegetables, don't we? Anyway, if you visit responsibleeatingandliving.com, you know that's where I live. You can get my newest recipe, which includes Celine's vanilla cake recipe and Shu Deaver's Swiss buttercream recipe. It's not that hard to make, and hopefully my instructions are clear. Let me know if you try it and how it works out, because it really is a wonderful, wonderful treat. And there are, of course, some fun stories in this week's What Vegans Eat, my daily blog. It's been an interesting week because I've been spending some time with my parents. My dad is 89 and my mom just turned 84. Happy birthday! And we all have different food requirements, so it's always a fun challenge feeding them. But I just want to tell you what one of my mom's favorite treats was this week when we got together for her birthday. We made a red pepper hummus. And you probably have heard my rant against store-bought hummus. So many of them are disgusting. Can I say that? Hummus should be made traditionally with garbanzo beans, lemon juice, olive oil, and sesame tahini, maybe a little salt, sometimes some herbs and spices. I don't make mine with olive oil. And we made one this week with roasted red peppers. We like Artisana sesame tahini. It's a little expensive, but it's the best organic sesame tahini you will ever have. And you mix that up, lemon juice and the garbanzo beans, and it makes the most perfect hummus. My mom really liked it spread on baked tofu. We make our own baked tofu at responsibleeatingliving.com. You can check out the recipe. This week we made it with maple syrup and coconut aminos instead of soy sauce because we wanted it to be gluten-free. And it was perfectly wonderful. Especially spread with that red pepper hummus. So check that out. In the meantime, have a very delicious week. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food, and I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I'll be back next week, and we'll be talking about the Alzheimer's solution. Don't miss it. Bye-bye.